So, very, very, very warm welcome, everyone. It's absolutely beautiful to see you all. And this is it, us beginning our retreat for a weekend, rather long weekend. I wish it was a week, but it's a weekend. And I just want to say a little bit, sort of a little bit about practical things. So we are on the retreat, and I've just came from a week's retreat. So I've literally gone from one retreat, and here I am entering another one on the same day, left one and moving into another one. But probably that's not for everyone like that. So I just want to invite you to sort of really take today as a time to arrive into the retreat and having, you know, starting to make that transition so we can really practice over the weekend. We can really work with our mind, and Ratnadeva will tell us a little bit more about the theme of the weekend in a moment. So it's an opportunity for us to be together and to practice together, and it's really important to give ourselves that time to transition into this way of being. And it's an online retreat, which means that you are in your particular home setting or wherever you are based. I suppose Olivia at the moment is on a train, so she is transitioning as we speak. You in your home, so it's very much really thinking and arriving about what do you want this weekend to be like, you know, how much space you want to create for yourself given your particular circumstances that you are at home with. So you can practice and you can do that within the particular setting that you have at home. And Ratnadeva will talk a little bit about the theme, and it will be a lot, you know, we're going to go into mythical places. This is going to be a journey of a mythical journey. And I just want you to see whether I want you to invite you in the weekend, maybe to create spaces where you can be creative, where you can maybe write, you can make shrines, you can draw things, you can build things, just having that space for the mind to play over the weekend. And we've got a session today. So we will have from now until 8:30. And as part of that session, we will spend a bit of time in groups and we'll do a little meditation and dedication ceremony and chant mantra. And then on Saturday, Sunday and Monday, we will start each day at 8 o'clock, 8 till 9, with a meditation. And then we've got 2-hour sessions, one in the morning and one in the afternoon, so 10:30 until 12:30, and then 4 o'clock till 6 o'clock. And we decided with Ratnadeva to go for a combination of breakout groups. So we will have breakout groups twice a day, and we will have one home group, which will be the group that you will be in today. And we will always meet in the afternoon or the evening session in that home group. And at 10:30, our breakout group will be a mixed one. So we're just going to have that opportunity so you can meet different people on the retreat, but you also have that stability of one group where you can hopefully share together a bit more deeper. So that's what we decided for this particular retreat. And one more thing we've sort of thought we would provide is having a lunch lounge. So from 1 till 2, me or Ratnadeva will open the Zoom meeting And if you want to come and have lunch and just chat with people whilst having lunch, you're welcome to do that. So it's totally optional, and it's 1 till 2, and it's a lunch lounge. So those are the main things I thought I would mention. And we are recording these sessions, so they will be available on the website, and I'll put that in the chat in just a moment. And if you also want to ask any questions, or if you need to contact me or Ratnadeva, then please send us a message and we'll pick that up and kind of respond to that. So here is the is the mail where you can send us questions, and here I'll just post the website where we will have all the different recordings and whatever readings we have. We'll put that on that particular website page. So I think those are the main things. And do get in touch if you do need to contact us, because sometimes when we will be in sessions, we might not be able to always have an eye on the chat or be able to sort out things straight away. So just know that there is that option there for you. And with that, I'll hand over to Ratnadeva.
Thank you, Pranyanita. Yeah, I'd like to echo that, what Pranyanita has just said. Just we want to make ourselves as available as we can be over the weekend for any questions, any comments that you may have, anything you'd like to share. I've got a couple of practical requests, really, before I start introducing the themes for the weekend. And the first is a bit radical. Mostly we've been starting events 5 minutes past the time that we advertise. So we're just as an experiment. The request is, could we try and start on time? So if you were to arrive 5 minutes before, I know that it's going against what we've been doing for the past 6 months, but can we, I'm going to try arrive 5 minutes before. So that means we can start exactly on the advertised time. Let's try it, see how it works. The second request is just around donations. So our aim is to make these sessions, these retreats, available to everybody, as available as possible, regardless of income. But in order to be able to follow this policy on an ongoing basis, obviously we need to get some donations in. So we'd be very grateful if you can afford. I know some of you have already been very generous. Thank you very much. You could look at it this way, that people who have donated in the past have made this session possible, have made it possible for the Westmoreland Buddha Center to continue adopting this policy. And we want to continue with it. So anything you give now will go towards being able to provide this kind of resource to either yourselves or other people in the future. So that's one way of looking at it. And of course, the future is pretty uncertain at this time. You know, we're not clear when we're going to be able to reopen the physical building. And until we do, that's 90% of our income, other than donations, that's 90% of our income non-existent. So, you know, the future is not guaranteed at all for the Westmoreland Buddha Center in terms of being able to continue into the future. So if you can help us in this regard, we'd be hugely grateful. Okay, I think that's enough on the practicalities. Let's look at the theme that we have lined up for this weekend that we want to explore together, the theme of the psychology of liberation. So this title, The Psychology of Liberation, is actually the title of the last chapter of a book called Mind and Harmony by an order member called Subhuti. And a group of us, some of us here, have been plowing through this book over a series of webinars, 12 webinars over the past few months. And we've been looking at is actually the Buddhist theory of mind, if you like that, and theory and practice of mind. So according to Buddhism, experiences are preceded by mind, are led by mind, and produced by mind. That's the very first point in the Dhammapada, those basic teachings of the Buddha. Experiences are preceded by mind, led by mind, and produced by mind. Mind is at the center of the Buddha's teaching. So what we've been exploring in those webinars is a Buddhist psychology. And in that, this particular tradition, the Abhidharma tradition, we were developing a kind of a map of our minds, a map of our inner landscape. And what the Abhidharma does is it identifies 51 different mental states, 11 positive mental states like attentiveness, contentment, goodwill, compassion, and 26, no less, negative mental states like craving, hatred, ignorance, pretense, stagnation. And the reason it identifies this litany of mental states is in order to help us to recognize them on the hoof, so on in real time, but also say on reflection, in order to be able to turn towards them and work with them, to come into full awareness of them and to work with them. And working with them means engaging our energies, making the effort to cultivate and maintain the positive that lead to our happiness, and on the other hand, prevent and end, close down, if you like, the negative mental states, which are the source of our suffering. So the goal of this work, of putting in this effort and energy, is freedom. So it's freedom from negative mental states. And hence from the title, you know, the word, the psychology of liberation. So it's a liberation that is the goal of the Buddha's path, a liberation from suffering. Now, how do we achieve that liberation? It calls for something completely radical, a radical transformation of our minds. So it's worth me saying something about the theory of mind that the Abhidharma presents, the Buddhist view of mind, which is that the mind is not a thing. It's a set of processes, five basic processes. Five processes that are going on in every knowing, in every act of consciousness. These five what we call constants are present. There are kind of five modes of knowing, and very briefly, they're contact, feeling, tone, interpretation, will, and attention. You don't really need to know the detail, but just to know that this is the way the Abhidharma sees mind, is as a set of five processes. And the problem is, these five processes are governed by ignorance. And we mean ignorance in a particular sense in this Buddhist context. We mean a dualistic thinking, the sense of splitting an I against the world. And this is the way we make sense. This is the way our minds work. In order to make sense of our experience, we split ourselves off from the world. We have a sense of ourselves and a sense of the external world. And we do this through making concepts, you know, that fix and separate. So we fix ourselves, separate ourselves, fix the world and things in the world. And this is, okay, this is how we make sense. This is of the world. And this is, it's a problem only insofar as we mistake this way of making sense of the world for actually how things are. So it produces this other result, which is destructive, which is that we end up with a sense of a fixed and separate self. And this taints our knowing. It makes it biased, if you like. It makes it self-centered. So it's an inevitable result of the splitting up between I and world, this fixation on self, my safety, my security, my happiness. And this dualistic thinking and the selfish attitude, if you like, obscures the way we see things, and it's not the way things really are. In a sense, we are prisoners of this dualistic, conceptual, and selfish way of thinking. We need to transcend this world, this erroneous world view of the world and ourselves. This is the aim of Buddhism. This is the kind of trajectory. This is the path that towards this goal of freedom. So what is needed then is a non-dualistic, non-conceptual, kind of intuitive, direct knowing, which in Buddhism is called wisdom. And in order to attain that, according to the Abhidharma, what needs to happen, what this radical transformation of mind entails, transforming the five constants that I've mentioned, those five processes that constitute mind, into five wisdoms. And we'll be exploring the five wisdoms this weekend. But basically, the five wisdoms are a description, one way of describing the awakened mind, the enlightened mind, the mind that sees the world as it is, a mind that is in harmony, is perfectly content and effective. Effective insofar as it sees the way things are and therefore knows how to relate to the world, how to intervene, what's appropriate. So how do we engage, how do we describe this awakened mind if it's beyond conceptual description? How to describe the indescribable, if you like? Well, that's in a way the task of this weekend. We have until Monday to engage with a description of the awakened mind. But in a sense, a description is not quite the right word. What we're going to attempt to do is to evoke the awakened mind. And we're going to do that through engaging with imagination. Imagination is crucial to this journey that we have ahead of us over this weekend. So when we reach the limits of concepts and reason, if you like, what we need to do is engage our imagination. We see if the wings of imagination can take us further than concepts and reasoning. So I have a quote from a book, a really good book, The Dark Mountain Project Manifesto. Let me give you the quote. It's around this area of how imagination is more powerful or has a particular function beyond concepts and reason. So beyond the limits of reason, reality remains mysterious, as incapable of being approached directly as a hunter's quarry. With stories, with art, with symbols, and layers of meaning, we stalk those elusive aspects of reality that go undreamed of in our philosophy. So we're not going to use the language of philosophy this weekend. We're going to use the language of the imagination. We're going to look at images and symbols to evoke the awakened mind, to evoke the enlightened mind. Symbols are more powerful in many ways than concepts. They can convey different layers of meaning. That's why, you know, poetry uses symbols in order to, in very few words, express such multiple levels of meaning. So there is a rich treasury of image and symbol in the Buddhist tradition. We've had 2,500 years of Buddhism since the Buddha died. And over that time, over that 2,500 years, practitioners have tried to engage with the Buddha's achievement, his enlightenment under the Bodhi tree. People, practitioners, if you like, have tried to access the Buddha, to get to know the Buddha. And in that time, over the centuries, you know, very advanced practitioners have had insights and had visions of the Buddha. And thereby, because, of course, the Buddha represents for us the embodiment of the awakened mind, they've had insights into aspects of the awakened mind. aspects like compassion, energy, contentment. And they have expressed them, or they have received these, if you like, images or visions that concretize, that express the aspects of the enlightened mind through sometimes figures, personified figures. I'll say a little bit more about that. A central set of images within the Buddhist tradition is called the mandala of the five Buddhas. And this is going to form a core structure for us this weekend, this set of symbols, this complex set of images, and all the symbolic associations that go with it, the mandala of the five Buddhas, including the five wisdoms that I've mentioned are the end result of transforming the five constants. So this mandala of the five Buddhas is quite a mysterious sounding description, isn't it? The mandala of the five Buddhas. We will encounter these five Buddhas over the weekend. Each of these Buddha figures is a personification of qualities of the awakened mind. If you like, they're a doorway to connect with the awakened mind. So to give you a quote about personifying from James Hillman, psychologist, personifying offers another avenue of loving, of imagining things in a personal form so that we can find access to them with our hearts. Loving is a way of knowing, and for loving to know, it must personify. So yes, it's opening a door, this personification, working with these five Buddha persons, provide a doorway to aspects of the awakened mind, particular aspects. So each of the Buddhas represents a particular aspect of the awakened mind. If you like, it's like approaching enlightenment from different angles. No single angle, if you like, can give you a full three-dimensional picture of the Buddha. But if you approach from different angles, you get a more rounded picture of enlightenment. And actually a more rounded picture of our own deepest nature, our full potential as human beings. What the Buddha overcame, we too can overcome. What the Buddha attained, we too can attain. So the way we're going to work principally with the five Buddha mandala this weekend is going to be through ritual. We're going to go on an imaginative journey, and ritual is one of the key tools available to us. We're going to have a feast of symbols, of imagery, and the invitation is to engage your imaginations with an open mind, an open heart. And see the figures that we meet as doorways, imaginative doorways, that we can look behind. We want to avoid any sort of literalism, so we don't want to get stuck in the doorway. We need to see them as opening out to meaning. But most of all, let's just enjoy let the imagery wash over you. So there will be teaching sessions, but in a sense, you could say that the teaching sessions are just footnotes to the rituals. They'll explain some of the background of the symbols, but just like in a poem, when you have footnotes, you know, that the footnotes just help you a bit with the poem itself, but they're quite subsidiary. So this is an opportunity this weekend to dwell on the qualities of the enlightened mind through these figures, through these images, to help us contemplate the ideals that they represent, like compassion, equanimity. And it's a lofty vision. And part of the key to working with them is not to be overwhelmed by the loftiness of the vision, to engage with them with a kind of can-do attitude. So despite the distance, we might feel, oh God, I fall so far short of that ideal. At least, you know, we can use this as our lodestar, our guiding star, our lodestone, to put us in the right direction. You know, if what our mind dwells on grows. So if we dwell on these qualities of the enlightened mind, perhaps we're going in at least in the direction. We're describing the five Buddhas as being in a mandala. What is a mandala? It's kind of a symbol of wholeness. Let me just hopefully illustrate what I'm saying here. Here, this is an example of a mandala of the five Buddhas. It's a symbol of wholeness, and as you can see, there's beauty and harmony in this. It's kind of a sense of bringing order out of the chaos. It's a sacred space, in a sense, a kind of temple of the mind and heart. The basic components are, as you can see, the circle, square, a center, and boundaries. I don't know if, I hope you can see my cursor, but they're kind of, one boundary is flame, another one here, it's very, very narrow, is vajras. So the flame represent transformation, vajras represent determination. And then you've got the lotus petals, these represent purity. And we'll be making reference to these boundaries into the mandala, the sacred space, in the dedication ritual that we'll be doing very shortly. So this mandala, is this sacred space, in a sense, is not a place apart, but in a sense, it's everywhere. It's about our attitude. It's accessible wherever we are. In a sense, it's about perspective and orientation. In a sense, we're already there. We're already in the mandala. And in a sense, it's about us allowing the mandala to reveal itself, for us to relax into it in our daily, simple daily tasks and experiences. To join William Blake when he writes, to see a world in a grain of sand and a heaven in a wild flower, to hold infinity in the palm of your hand and eternity in an hour. Okay, that is enough from me as introduction to the weekend.